Good evening, everyone. This is Alice Massa, president of Behind Our Eyes, and I am delighted to welcome all of you to our third Behind Our Eyes book launch. Tonight's book launch will feature poet Joan Miles and her third book entitled One Goes to the Sea. As we are gathered here together on this March 22nd, 2022, we are just a couple of days after World Poetry Day and a little over a week away from National Poetry Month. So this is a perfect time to have Joan Miles as our author, whom we are going to celebrate and launch her book this evening. And I know that many of you here are at least very well acquainted with Joan, but and probably many of you have read her absolutely wonderful bio that is in her books. But as means of introduction here, I'm going to tell you just a few highlights from Joan's life before we begin. After Joan, after Joan was received her degree, and a degree that was the Bachelor of Arts in Elementary Education, she also earned a master's degree in Jewish studies. Besides working as a rehabilitation teacher, Joan also taught Hebrew and Jewish and Judaics to third through sixth graders. And then Joan founded a nonprofit organization that was providing free of charge.
If you check, got it, it means that
that was providing free of charge the Jewish learning for students who were blind or visually impaired throughout the nation. Not only did Joan establish this nonprofit, she also had the occasion to do the textbook development and worked as an instructor as well for 7 years. After this, Joan has turned to her more creative side, and that's good for all of us who love to read her poetry and certainly enjoy her being a part of Behind Our Eyes. And in 2019, Joan decided that she would share with Behind Our Eyes an idea for a new branch. And at that time, began the Reader's Workshop of Behind Our Eyes. And Joan is still today the team leader of Reader's Workshop. And we are just so grateful that she's a wonderful member of our national, really international, writers group. Since 2019, Joan has been a prolific poet, published poet. In 2019, she published her first collection of poetry, One with Willows. In 2020, she published One Glittering Wing. And at the end of 2021, the book that we're going to focus on this evening, and that is One Goes to the Sea. So at this time, I am very pleased to turn the microphone over to a great friend and member of Behind Our Eyes, and really a wonderful writer and friend, Joan Miles.
Hi, Alice. It's wonderful to be here. Thank you. So before we get started, I want to introduce my daughter, Colleen, who came along for this event and is instrumental in illustrating this new little collection of poems that we'll be talking about this evening. Colleen contributed very much also to my other two volumes by providing cover art. And I just had to bring her along so that she could talk about the illustrations for anybody who might have questions for her, and to maybe explain a little bit about her method to those of us that can't see visually the output of her creative efforts. So Colleen, would you like to say hello?
Sure. Hi, everyone. I'm really excited to be here, and I would love to share and answer any questions that come along later, but thank you for having me.
Great. Okay, Alice. Right.
I have a question for the two of you. When did the two of you first start talking about working together on one of your books?
Well, I wanted to bring together a collection of poems, and Colleen has always been very creative artistically. And I couldn't think of a better person to bounce ideas off concerning, the cover art. And so I asked her if she could help me develop the covers for all three of my books. Colleen, you want to talk a little bit about the process of how you created those covers?
Sure. So whenever John writes a book, we kind of talk about what the theme is and what the goal is and what she hopes that the readers get from reading each poem and, the overall kind of vibe that, exists in the work. And then from there, we develop imagery or colors. One Glittering Wing is, the cover is just a lot of colors, and there's watercolor painting, and so that was an instance where the feeling was most important more than a single image, and so we kind of collaborate and go forward in what we want to express.
Thanks. And the first book, I had an idea that since the first book, One with Willows, is all about the wonder of nature, I thought, well, maybe the cover could express this by somehow representing what it would look like to be laying under a tree and looking up into the branches. And that's what Colleen was able to do with her watercolor. So she's been a great help in bringing, a lot of extra beauty to whatever I can present in words.
Okay, thank you, Joan. And Colleen, would you like to describe the cover of One Goes to the Sea for everyone, please?
Of course. So, like we were saying, we kind of look at the whole collection and then go from there. And so this book is more, the intention was for it to feel like a journal, like a dream journal. And so when we talked about what we want the cover to look like, we went with that vibe and feel, and we wanted it to feel like you're holding somebody's dream journal. And so the cover is a black textured fabric with letters that look like they were stamped in with gold lettering, and so that way it kind of looks like a sketchbook that you may find on someone's nightstand.
Okay, thank you. And Joan, I wonder if you would let us know why you selected the title, One Goes to the Sea. I went back and was reading again your wonderful One Glittering Wing, and I realized that you do mention the sea in some of your poems in your second collection. And then the final poem of One glittering wing veils has that final image about the sea in it. Did that have anything to do with your coming to this book with this title?
Well, the first two titles were created by my husband. He picked the first two titles, and he liked those phrases. He was my original editor, and so he got very familiar with every word of my books as he was helping edit them. So he liked those, the way those words played out. And the third book, I felt like since the first two both started with the word one, it would be nice if I had a series of three that started with one. And actually in my poetry, one is capitalized and connotes divinity. So I thought that was also fitting, you know, to have the oneness of creation and divinity represented in the titles. So, and there is a line in one of the poems, in the poem, The Journey, it starts with one goes to the sea. So, and you're right, there are a lot of images of water in this current volume. The sea also has a poem. So I love visiting the coast, and the hugeness of the sea always feels like it represents so much possibility and vastness of nature. And there you go.
Well, since you've mentioned water and how that is a recurring theme and image of your poetry, are you ready to share with us the first poem of your current collection? And
sure.
Tell us a little bit about that first poem.
So this poem is, I'll read it. It's kind of it's got some images, and it may say different things to different people. So we'll see how it goes. It's called Half, H-A-L-F, Half. A man's glass is half full of water, and sometimes he leaves it on the windowsill just to see what will happen. The sun tosses its beams across the sky. The window always notices, always empties itself to accommodate. The water catches the light, slows everything down, and keeps playing. It won't let go of the light, won't let go of the sun, won't let go of playing. Can't you do more than that? He asks. He pours the water down the drain and closes the curtain. So I wanted this poem. Sorry?
Thank you for reading that so beautifully. Go ahead, please.
Oh, sure. Thank you. So I wanted to open the collection with this poem because water, to me, has a lot to do with a sense of spirituality. And water and light and the sense of playfulness and being open to spirituality is a prevalent theme throughout all my poems. And this collection of poems has some rather, the whole first half, we'll probably talk about this, Alice, but the whole first half is darker. It's got, in a quirky way, some of the images are darker than others, but it is kind of dark. And I thought this is kind of interesting to open the book with this poem, which is about light and water and possibility, and it feels right away like you're closing the curtain. Well, you are at the end of the poem, but, you know, like on a stage here, you've opened this play to start, and right away you're closing the curtain. So I just thought it gave kind of a spooky or eerie or darkly quirky way to open a book, is to close the curtain. It just, it puts you in a certain kind of strange mood. So that's why it opens the book.
And would you like to say just a little bit about the poem that is somewhat hand in hand with this poem, but it's at the end of part one?
So I wanted to have distinct bookends at the beginning and end of each of the sections. There are three sections. So at the beginning of part one, we have the poem I just read, which is called Half, and the section ends with a poem that's called Empty. And I thought that was kind of an interesting way to frame it, because you've got this darker section of the book and you've got half and empty, and, you know, so there's that idea. And in the second section, do you want me to go on to explain that a little?
If you want to, that's fine.
Okay. So the second section, the opening poem is called The Poet's Promise, and the final poem is about an actual poet. And the second section is more about flights of fancy that have a lighter, more poetic and musical tone. And then the third section is just a couple of little poems to get you thinking about choosing which way your thoughts go, kind of, because I really believe that our thoughts can move our lives. And so the third section is kind of a challenge to the reader to make a choice.
Thank you for sharing that overview of the three parts of your book. And since you've talked about that, I would really like to know, when did you first begin the thought process for this book? Were you finishing off the second one, or was it after the second was completely finished? And also, what brought you to the idea for this third book?
So when I was working on my second book, I'm always thinking ahead, and I had these poems that needed a home, and I even had some poems from long, long ago that I thought might be interesting to share with people. So I tried to form them into some kind of a coherent message. And my favorite part, as Alice knows, of bringing a collection together is trying to arrange the poems in a meaningful way. So I looked over these poems and I saw that, you know, some of them were really light and sweet and some of them weren't, they had a different tone, a kind of a darker tone. And so then I started writing with those themes in mind to see if I could fill in some of the gaps. And that's kind of what happened. So I just arranged them kind of in the two modes of the year. You have the darker season, which isn't necessarily negative. It's more of a reflectful, it can be eerie, because self-reflection and, you know, a more meditative, restful state can be somewhat unsettling, but it can also be a time to gather your thoughts together, like in hibernation for animals. And then we have the lighter season when things are growing and coming out and the world becomes more magical and musical. And that's kind of what I wanted to represent here. So we have, the darker side of nature and life. And then we have the lighter side of nature and life.
Okay, thank you. And I think maybe this would be a good time to ask Colleen about how she paired her drawings inside the book with some of your poetry.
Great.
Sure. So I went through, and like John was talking about the different sections, the darker and the lighter, and the choice. And I went through and read each of the poems and then tried to just kind of describe to myself what that made me think of. You know, I had my own imagery and I chose the drawing that, you know, that poem made me feel and made me sense and, you know, what imagery there may be. And then of course I talked to her about it and was like, here's what I'm getting from this, just to make sure it wasn't, you know, something totally off base. And from there we kind of collaborated to finalize the imagery. And so it really, all of the images that are in the book came from reading it and from feeling what the poems describe.
And they're more like doodles, right?
They are. So they are, the way that they appear is they're sketches with dark ink, and then there's some grayscale watercolor. It's a watercolor ink. And so, but it's all black and white. And so the hope was that it would kind of give that feel of if you woke up from a dream and you just real quick sketched what the dream was and how it made you feel.
That's great.
That's very interesting. Thank you. And Joan, why don't you please tell us where your book is available before we go on and talk about the dreams and how they are related to your poems and another reading from you. Where can our audience and other people find your book?
Sure. So my books are available at Amazon and Smashwords and all those great places. And you can find links to all those places at my website, which is JewNiquely.com, JewNiquely myself.com. And there are links to all of my books and more writings and things like that.
Okay. And now how about those dreams? I find it so fascinating that Joan has such vivid dreams and she remembers them, and then they inspire her to write poetry. So would you like to share just a little bit about that with us and then go on to reading your poem Parlor Games for us, please?
Sure. So, yes, I have very vivid dreams many times, and I started noticing that every now and then a phrase would stick with me from a dream or an image, and I started keeping my own dream journal in Braille, you know, or on the computer, and just jotting down images. Or sometimes waking up from a dream, I just jot it all down, and sometimes it ends up coming out as a poem. So the one that I'm about to read, Parlor Games, kind of, it spilled out it just spilled out. I woke up from the dream and I just wrote about the images and a few of the phrases that came to me in the dream. And this is what it is. So here we go. Parlor Games. The undertaker has gone away. Mama is resting in the parlor. What would Daddy say? This is all too much for her. But I walk in a dream. Some strange southern lady, still inhabiting the family home with her widowed mother and sisters. Our brother is gone. Sorry. Taken away in the new blue suit Jimmy Robbins picked out for him, our brother Ned. And like memories, words swirl in and around me as I sit in the dining room sipping lemonade. The undertaker has gone away, and Ned is wearing his new blue suit. What would Daddy say? This is all too much. So you can see it's got some distinct images and a few lines that repeat. And there you go.
Well, thank you for reading that for us. And the cadence and the repeating lines, as you said, certainly give it such a rhythmical flow that it's very enjoyable to listen to the poem being read. Now, before we talk about before you read your next poem, The Poet's Promise, I'm wondering, as we move into part two, and you already described for us the differences between part one and part two, and as we move into the second part and you read a couple of poems from it for us, the title, The Poet's Promise, makes me want to ask you to tell us a little bit about how important poetry has been and is in your life. And what's important for you to share with your readers and with other poets about poetry?
Oh, Alice, what a great question. Thank you. I think poetry is very important. It's more than rhyme and rhythm. There's something so universally poignant and important about poetry through the ages. It is an expression of art and beauty, but it's also a way that people have really communicated heart to heart, because there are opportunities in poetry that don't often happen in prose to convey really deep human messages, and I think the elements of imagery and, you know, all the techniques we learn about in poetry, you know, metaphors and simile, comparing things together, comparing things against each other, and looking deeply into the layers of our experience and how we connect as humans. I think poetry is able to do all those things. And it certainly has been important to me when I think about my own life growing up. Poetry helped me express myself as I made my way as a person losing vision and trying to make it in the world. And, you know, poetry is just human connection, heart to heart. And I hope that everyone will try their hand at writing a poem. It doesn't have to be beautiful to be poetry. It simply has to be of the heart. And I've always found poetry around me. If you sit in a garden and you sit very still and allow yourself to be silent and just experience the moment, I think poetry will find you. So thanks for asking.
Said, thank you. It's a wonderful image for us to think about, to ponder. Now, would you like to read the poet's promise that begins part two of your book, please?
Sure. So this is one where a few little words came to me, and then the rhyme and the rhythm just kind of took over. So it's the poet's promise. In language I live, and in living I linger. A finger, a sieve, a sliver of love, living silvery river within and above.
That's a short one, but it is just full of thought for all of us, and it just, I think, suits this occasion so very well. So thank you for sharing that. And at the end of part two, Joan has for us, for all of her readers, her only acrostic poem in the collection. And when I first read it, I didn't even think of it as being an acrostic. And Colleen, I'll ask you, does it on the page look like an acrostic poem? Did you do something different with the initial letters of each line?
You know, I didn't, and I wish now that I had, because that's a very good idea. I think in future editions, maybe we will make it more dynamic in that way.
They are capitalized. The first letters are capitalized, whereas none of my other poems usually do that. So,
okay, so that would be a clue to the sighted reader. But I always think that the key to a really superb acrostic is that one reads it and or hears it and does not realize that the poem is an acrostic, but then afterwards it's so neat to find out that the poem really is and has such great flow that you're not interrupted by the stem letters or words of the acrostic, and you certainly achieved that with Anna. And this poem also has some historical significance, so would you like to tell us a little bit about the poem and then read Anna for us, please?
Sure. So this poem is about an actual poet whose name was Anna Akhmatova, and she was a Russian poet. I think she lived from 1880 something to 1960s, and so her life, she was in Russia her whole life, and during all those volatile years of the revolution and the two wars, and she, along with many other creative people and poets, were censored. Their writing was not permitted to be published, and their lives were in danger even for being published. Her own husband was executed, and she spent many years not publishing her work, just writing them in her head, because she was in danger. And while she was standing in the bread lines, at one point, a woman came up to her and said, "Can you write this?" And she said, "Yes." So this again underscores how vital poetry is to be able to express people's yearnings and what's happening, and you know, the very danger of just speaking the truth is represented in Anna Akhmatova's life. So so I thought it was fitting to end this section with a poem about her, because we have the poet's promise, and then we have Anna and her dedication to speaking the truth. So I'll read that. Anna. A notebook burns. Your verses in the flames kaleidoscopically ignite to sing. Half-truths and lies require no censuring. Mutations of the muse. Oh, better mute, assuredly. The people's voice, their soul, transported off to camps, imprisoned and obliterated both by guns and fear, voraciously consumed like everything, and witness waits for words to reappear.
Thank you so much for reading that for us. That's such a wonderful poem also. And since you've already talked about the shortest part of your book, the third part, I think we'll go on and ask you about your acknowledgement section. I always love reading acknowledgements that writers put in their books. I find that very fascinating. And you always write such a lovely acknowledgement section in each of your three books. Is there anything you would like to say about that part of your book?
Oh, I love writing the acknowledgments. It's a place for me to tuck little tidbits about my family, and because I am so well supported in every way by my family. My dad, who is a real inspiration to me at 95, you know, and Colleen and her business partner who helped me produce the book, and my partner in life, my husband, who's always behind my efforts, and my kids and grandsons, and you know, it's great to acknowledge the people that walk with us through life's journey. So
it's a very enjoyable and satisfying part of the book to write, I think, you really so very well. And I have a, since National Poetry Month is coming up, I'm wondering if you had to recommend two or three other poems that you're not reading tonight, but that you would really like for other people here, other readers to enjoy reading during National Poetry Month, or provoke thought through reading two or three poems, which titles would you give us?
You mean other people's poems?
Your own poems from
oh, my
book.
Own poems?
Yeah.
Oh, you're very sweet.
Two or three that you've not yet read, but you would like for us to read or reread.
Oh, there's a, let's see. Boy, I should have prepared for this one. Let's see. There are, like I said, the poems that are about water. There's one that says, I become water. And the one about the sea, just trying to figure out what the sea is all about and how it relates to existence. And there is a poem that I wrote some years ago that's called Passing. And it's kind of reflective about the passing of the main character's husband, and it draws a picture about hope, even though some of the images may not seem hopeful. I think overall it is hopeful, a hopeful poem, talking about the passing from one phase of life to another. So there you go.
Thank you very much. And I want to give the opportunity for other people to ask some questions of Joan also. I have another page of questions here that I've not yet asked, but I want to make certain that everybody has time to ask his or her question. And so Annie, do you want to go over the instructions for raising hands? And then we'll take questions from our audience, please.
Sure. Good evening, everyone. This is your Zoom host, Annie Chepeta. If you want to raise your hand, if you're on a PC, it's Alt-Y. If you're on a mobile phone, it's under the More button, raise your hand. If you're on a landline, it's *9. If you're muted, when I call on you, you can unmute with Alt-A for a computer, for your mobile phone. If you swipe to the left, and it's on the bottom left-hand side. If you're on a landline, *6. So we have some hands raised. Please give me a second to get to the list. And I'll announce you and the next person, and then we'll go down the list accordingly. Okay, so the person with the area code 215.
That's me. It's Sally.
Hi, Sally. You're first.
Hi. Okay. Joan, you're going to be a hard act to follow in April. That's all I can say. But
thank you.
Your poetry is amazing. I wanted to comment especially on Anna. I have two parts to the question. How did you hear of her? And two, is it easier or more difficult to read that poem in light of what's going on in the world today?
Oh, that's very good. I heard of her. I actually got a copy of her, one of her books from the National Library Service. So you can find her there. And yes, hearing about everything in Ukraine and Russia, you know, just resonates so much with what she went through. And it's so tragic to see things happening over and over again. So thank
she
you
could
for
be
your
standing
your sensitivity.
In the bread line today.
Exactly. And I'm looking forward to your presentation, Sally.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm going
Sally.
To talk about that at the end of our time together this evening. So.
Sure.
That is a great question, Sally. Thank you.
Okay, so next we have Kate Chamberlain, and after that we have Terry.
Very nicely done, Joan. My question is kind of silly, but in this book, which is your all-time favorite poem and why?
Oh, thanks, Kate. I think my favorite poem is The Poet's Promise, because it's kind of a sweet melody, and it keeps me rooted in what I'm supposed to be doing as a poet, you know, playing with language and using it in ways to reflect the heart. So thank you for asking.
Well, keep on writing.
Would
thank
you think of that poem, Joan, as your anthem?
Oh, I would love that to be my anthem. You bet.
That's the way I thought of it.
Thank you.
Annie, back to you.
Oh, Carrie, you're next.
Thank you very much. Am I unmuted?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay.
Yes.
Joan, first of all, nice presentation. I enjoyed your reading, too, of your poems. I'd never heard of Anna Akhmatova. So I certainly wish you all the best with your book. Have you considered putting your books on Bookshare?
It's in the works. I mean, I'm still working on that kind of stuff. Thank you for asking. And I really appreciate your being here.
I've got Bookshare now. So, and it's very easy to download. I have the Easy Reader app on my Braille Note Touch. So it's very easy to download books from Bookshare. So.
I'll look into it. Thank you.
And now on Smashwords.
I would love to share my work more. Yeah.
Okay. On Smashwords, are your books free or do they cost something?
They're $6, I think.
They're $6. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
You bet. Thank you.
Okay, Alyssa, you're next.
It's Lisa.
Hi.
I was just wondering what poets have influenced your writing and who is your favorite?
Well, I have read a lot of poets and I'm always finding more that I love. Mary Oliver is one of my favorites. When I'm looking for someone to boost me spiritually or my sense of wonder, I turn to her. Roberto Juarez in English, when I need a jolt of creativity, because his poems are like puzzles to me and they really get me thinking in lots of different ways. And Amy Lowell, I have discovered lately, she's an imagist, and I'm kind of been exploring her a little bit. And so, do you have a favorite poet, Lisa?
I also like Mary Oliver and Emily Dickinson.
And, oh, yes.
You did a great job. Thanks.
Thanks so much for coming.
And Lisa, since you mentioned Emily Dickinson, I must get in this little plug here. Joan is going to read her remarkable poem, Dancing with Emily Dickinson, that is from One Glittering Wing at our virtual luncheon for National Poetry Month. We're going to have the archivist from the Jones Library at Amherst, Massachusetts as our guest speaker, but Joan will also be presenting her poem. So we'll get a little bit of Emily there.
Good. Thank you.
One of my favorite poems by Joan is Dancing with Emily Dickinson.
Yes, it's a remarkable poem.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Oh my goodness. Okay. Leonard, you're next. You have your hand raised. Alt A to unmute.
There
you go.
Okay.
Good.
Hi, Leonard.
Hi. What are some of your favorite symbols? I'm talking about, are they air, is it darkness, is it rivers, all of the above? What are some of the ones that you really like to play with?
Oh, I love water and light, just airy things. I wish I had paid more attention when I was visually able of capturing the world that way. But I do remember, you know, light and water, and I those are the most remarkable to me because they're so obviously fluid and have so many different aspects. You know, fog is fun, and yeah. Thanks for asking. What are your favorite? Do you have favorite symbols?
Well, yeah. I guess animals, darkness, water. I can name so many of them, but I think water might be one.
Yeah, mine too. The movement of water and rivers and
I happen to be writing a poem about a river now, but.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for bringing all that.
Well, thank you. Good job.
Thank you.
Joan, this is Annie. What's next for you? What's coming up in the future?
Well, I'm trying to get back to more spiritually centered pieces. So I'm looking closer at nature again and trying to connect. The fact that it's spring and a little cheerier here in the Northwest, weather-wise, helps me. So I'll be, you know, visiting my garden much more often and catching glimpses of images in the breeze, audio images, and you know, gathering poems that way. Thanks for asking. So hopefully a little more spiritual, like the first and second books were.
Hmm. Oh, wonderful. I can't wait to read what you write.
Do you hope to have the fourth book out within a year again, or are you going to allow yourself a little more time this time?
Well, it's fun to put one out each year, but I don't want to put too many constraints on it. So,
well, do we have anyone else with a hand raised, Annie?
No, we have no more hands, but I do have another question for Joan in terms of, like we all have our routines, you know, of writing, like how we prepare ourselves. Do we get a coffee? Do we get a tea? Do we go up to the attic in our little room? Do we go down to the basement? Do we go out to the patio? What's your routine? How do you set yourself up to connect with your creative side?
Oh, thank you. I try to find silence. I mean, really, really. And it doesn't have to just be physical silence, but silence within myself, and try to still all the worries and whirlings of my own thinking and see how open I can be. Sometimes it's in the morning in my office as the light starts to come in. Sometimes it's in the middle of the night. I have found some really interesting poems in the middle of the night, and then all night I'm repeating them over to myself when I wake up so I don't forget them. So it's just wherever I am, if I catch a word, I might try and sit with it for a while and see where it takes me. I used to try and write every day. I have to get back into that pattern again. It's been a little difficult, but I used to get up very early and sit in my office and take time to be quiet and find that moment of silence. So that is a good well for me to dip into. Thanks for the nudge.
Sure. Yeah. I think Sally has another question. Right, Sally? 215? That's you, Sally, right?
Hi. Yes, I do. Joan, your poems are so deeply personal. Have you written things that you just feel are too personal to share? Do you have a drawer of things that you put away? Or do you feel that because you write them, there's kind of a promise to share them with people?
That's an excellent question.
Yeah. That's
I'm not
very
asking
good.
You to name the topics if you do. But
no,
it just seems like you're so, yeah.
Some of them are really personal, but and sometimes I kind of disguise things, or imagery is a great way of shielding your emotions or your privacy even a little bit. Mm-hmm. So in my second book, One Glittering Wing, it's there's a poem about my mother who had just died. And it was a very hard poem to write. And so there's a lot of imagery that more expresses how I was feeling. If you know, mm-hmm. You know how it is. So, yeah. because there are some things I can't be one of those more confessional poets who tell everything.
I was just thinking of that word. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm nothing against that at all. I can't write like that. So I kind of camouflage things just to evoke the feelings, you know.
I don't know if it's camouflage or taking it to the next level. But you do it so well.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, it's not really camouflage because you are revealing the feelings of it. But it feels a little more veiled, maybe. Not totally hiding, but just maybe a little more protective, you know?
Yeah.
So
thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Great question, Sally. We don't have any
more. Probably getting to about that time when I should ask you, Joan, if you have any final remarks that you would like to make this evening, and also repeat the information about where people can find your books. So if you just want to do a little concluding portion here for us, I'll say a little something after you.
Sure. First, I want to thank everyone for coming, and those of you that asked questions, thank you so much for joining the discussion. Those of you that have any questions or comments to make, I would love to hear from you. You can write to me. You can contact me at my website and learn about my books and things there too. It's Juniquely Myself, JewNiquely myself.com. I would love to hear your thoughts, and I hope that you write your heart and share it with people you care about, and even people who may not know you, so that you can send your vibrations into the world. I also want to thank Colleen for being here and give her a chance for a little plug for herself. Colleen?
I'm always happy to be here. You can visit my website, which is twopentacles.com, twopentacles.com.
Wait, spell again. You're hard to hear.
Sorry. It's twopentacles.com. And feel free to reach out if you have a book that you're hoping to get self-published and you need a little help, or you need some illustrations or anything like that. My business partner, Dawn, and I.
Joan, would you like to repeat that website, spelling it out for everyone?
Yes. Sure. Colleen got a little faint there. So, yes, Colleen is not only my illustrator and cover art design person, but she and her partner, Dawn, are publishing assistants, and they are very helpful when you are dealing with all aspects of publishing. They also do they do everything. So, and they're, you can find them at twopentacles.com, twopentacles.com. They do editing and proofreading and lots more, and they're a great support when you need an assistant. So thank Colleen.
Thank you, Joan. Our warmest and most special thanks to you for sharing this evening of poetry with us. It's just been wonderful to have you present for our third Bow book launch. And I'm totally ready here to nominate you for Poet Laureate of Oregon. So I hope, Colleen, you sort of take that ball and run with it, because I think your mother's very deserving of that. But Colleen, thank you very much also for joining us and describing how you did the cover and illustrations, and this mother-daughter team here, we're just delighted to have you. It's a unique opportunity. And Annie, thank you so much for being our Zoom host this evening and for each of our prior Bow Book launches. We really appreciate your expertise, your time, and your help. Now I'm going to give just a very quick little commercial for Behind Our Eyes. For all of you here this evening who are not members of Behind Our Eyes, you are certainly welcome and encouraged to visit our website. It is simply the http://www.behindour.org. We have lots of information there for you. And if you know of someone who is a person with a disability and who also loves writing, please share our information with that individual. We are now proud to say that we have 108 members in our international, really, organization. So thank you for being here with us tonight, all of you. I appreciate your attendance here and your participation so very, very much. And I ask you to please join us again for our fourth Bow Book launch on April 7th. That's a Thursday, same time, 8 o'clock Eastern Time. And on April 7th, our Bow Book launch will feature Sally Rosenthal, whom you heard ask a couple of wonderful questions here tonight. And Sally's book that will be featured will be Peonies in Winter. It's a marvelous book, and we look forward to our next Bow Book launch as well. So I want to say good night and thank you again to all of you. I give you all my best wishes for happy reading and writing of poetry during National Poetry Month. Take care, everyone. And again, good evening.